It's time now for our weekly look at Congress with USA Today politics editor Paul Singer. Yesterday, Wisconsin's Paul Ryan released his proposal aimed at balancing the federal budget. Is it a political statement or a document with a chance of passing?
Also yesterday, General Motors' Mary Barra was on the hot seat in front of Congress over GM's faulty ignition switches. We're used to seeing executives kind of shamed in front of Congress, but what do these kinds of testimonies accomplish?
And the conflict between the Senate and the CIA continues with the impending release of the Senate's report on CIA interrogation practices.
Paul Singer joins us every week at this time. Paul, it's great to have you with us.
Hey, how you doing, Veronica?
Doing okay. Thanks for joining us. I know you're on vacation now, so appreciate your time.
No trouble.
Now, we heard yesterday from Maya McGinnis on the show talking about Paul Ryan's 2015 budget proposal, and our guest, Maya McGinnis, said it was presented mostly as a political document, an agenda setter, but how is it going over in Washington?
As a political document and an agenda setter. the House of Representatives begins voting on this thing today and the next few days in committee, and then probably next week as well on the House floor, they'll be debating it. But there's no way for it to pass. I mean, for starters, the budget assumes the repeal of Obamacare. The President of the United States is not going to sign that, and the Senate is not going to pass it.
Well, it assumes it, but it's also the whole budget seems to be predicated on that. What kind of message does that send?
Well, that's what I mean. Is that they don't think that? I mean, I think it is clear at this point that they're not going to be able to pass that through this Congress. So if they're putting it in a budget document, then the assumption is they're putting the document in order to make a political statement, which is, this is what we would do in a Republican Congress if we had control. This is what we would do if we had a Republican White House. It is really just an opportunity to spend 2 weeks talking about the Republican agenda, which focuses heavily on stuff like flattening the tax rates, cutting some of the discretionary spending, and again, eliminating the Affordable Care Act. Those things are issues that the Republicans want to continue talking about it. The Democrats, frankly, in the Senate probably aren't even going to offer a budget at all because they don't need to. They already had a deal in the House and the Senate. They passed in January for a 2-year budget. So this bill doesn't really have a purpose.
Right. So as you say, the Senate has no intentions, really, or any need to take this up, but will portions of it come back down the road?
Oh, sure. I mean, if you look at the document closely, you'll see most of it is stuff that Republicans have been pushing for anyway. The repeals of Obamacare, some of the changes in the tax rates, some of the reductions in discretionary spending, cuts in food stamps and Medicare and Medicaid. There's actually some interesting proposals in here that I suspect you would see if there's a Republican Senate after the elections. I suspect that these would be very high on the list of things they might try to achieve.
One of the other things... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, until the elections change the state of play, none of this could become law.
Now, one of the other things besides the repeal of Obamacare that catches your attention in this budget is the privatization option for Medicare. Is that something that caught your eye, too, as something which could have some political weight down the road?
Well, sure, down the road. I mean, this is one of those things that the Democrats will latch on to argue during the 2014 election cycle and beyond for older people. You don't want to vote for the Republicans because they want to privatize Medicare. And this is this battle that has run on for years, and I suspect will continue to run on for years. The fact of the matter is, everybody agreed our entitlement programs, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, are running at a rate that will bankrupt them sooner or later, and they have to figure out a way to fix them. Nobody's come up with a way yet, and nobody's come up with a way we can pass and agree to pass. This is a Republican approach that is not brand new, and I suspect will be highlighted by both parties come November.
And it would, supposedly, if it were implemented, balance the budget in 10 years. What about that? Is that something that's a priority for Republicans and maybe Democrats? Should it be?
Well, I wouldn't put too much weight on any of that. Any 10-year estimate of any budget is absurd at this point because they keep changing spending habits every year anyway. That's the first thing. The second thing is, in this particular budget, they achieve balance in part because they argue that large macroeconomic changes caused by the change in tax policy will create more revenue, which is really theoretical. So there's no real math here. This is budget math. We're not balancing the budget in 10 years off of any of these bills at this point.
How would it look as a document intended to launch Paul Ryan to maybe a presidential bid?
Well, honestly, at the moment, I think what Paul Ryan is really angling for is the chairmanship of the House Ways and Means Committee, where he would be able to actually start writing some of the tax law changes he wants. That's sort of where I anticipate seeing him in 2 years. It's conceivable still he would run for president, I guess. But he's the kind of wonky guy who might really appreciate and be good at chairing the Ways and Means Committee. And that certainly seems where he's angling for now.
Moving on to a different perspective of Congress, Mary Barra, CEO General Motors, sat before Congress yesterday to answer questions about her company's faulty ignition switches. Now, should we expect to see anything concrete come from that bit of testimony and maybe a bit of public shaming combined?
I think to see a bunch of things. I'm not sure how could they connect to the testimony. I mean, for instance, I would not be surprised to see GM try to create some kind of a trust fund to pay claims to victims of these fatal accidents. At the moment I know that the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration is investigating its own actions regarding GM. I know that GM is investigating its own actions. I mean, there's a whole series of things that have come out of this, and Congress is going to drive some portion of it, because they are going to start looking very closely at, for instance, the bankruptcy documents that General Motors filed in which they voided their liability for any past actions. Congress is going to take a look at that and say, well, did they know at the time that this was something that was on the table? And if so, should we void their immunity? A bunch of stuff Congress could look at here I suspect it's going to drag on for quite a while.
Wait, so theoretically their immunity could be taken away?
Well, theoretically. I mean, it's not the sort of thing that Congress likes to do, and obviously it would be extraordinarily punitive to a bunch of shareholders. But, yeah, in theory, if they were to say that the company lied or knew it was not telling the truth or was hiding something at the time, you could make a case for removing their immunity.
Well, switching to infighting among Washington insiders, the CIA and the Senate are currently on bad terms, and the source of the tension, a still-secret Senate report, which allegedly shows that there was no link between a harsh interrogation and finding Osama bin Laden. What are relations like between the CIA and Congress right now?
Terrible. Bleak House kind of terrible. I mean, at the debate over this report has become a dispute that the CIA accused the Senate of improperly accessing materials off the CIA computer. The Senate accused the CIA of spying on the Senate to find out what materials had been downloaded. They are forwarding the matter to the Justice Department for possible criminal prosecution. I mean, it's just this. Huh. It's become a mess. And the heart of this is the interrogations, the sort of harsh interrogations and the waterboarding that took place before the Obama administration took over and basically put the kibosh on it. And it's not only the interrogations that's the problem. The problem is Congress believes the CIA lied to Congress about what intelligence they were gathering from those harsh interrogations. What Congress believes is that the waterboarding and the harsh interrogations produced nothing of value, but the CIA told them it did in order to defend the program.
Well, the congressional panel is going to be voting on whether to declassify a summary of the report tomorrow. If that happens, what's at stake?
You know, what is at stake is a reopening of one of the most painful chapters in American history. What is at stake is a public conversation again about, did the United States knowingly torture prisoners in order to try and shake loose information about terrorist attacks? And, did the CIA lie about what they were doing? Did they lie about what information they were getting? Were they getting any useful information? It no matter what happens here, and if it, when this report becomes public, I suspect pieces of it are, I mean, they're becoming public now, even though they haven't released it, it is going to reopen a window on a detail of a very ugly period of American history. And an argument can be made whether this is a good thing or a bad thing, but it was an ugly thing one way or the other, and it's going to be an unpleasant conversation.
All right. We may be talking about it next week, too. Paul, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, and have a great day.
You too. We're talking to Paul Singer, USA Today politics and Congress editor. He joins us every week at this time to give us the lowdown on Washington.